quorum yet.
I think I told you that, you know, my sister had the same issues.
But we're going to have Representative Howe go through his bill and give us an explanation of what he is looking to do. Representative Howe.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I know we can't move the amendment yet, but I'll talk to I don't believe the amendment really changes the bill, but the bill basically, what it does is allows, right now, counties, cities and townships, and cities and school districts are allowed to opt out of having an audit done by the state auditor and can use private CPA firms to conduct their audits. Counties can apply for a three-year exemption. Every 3 years they can apply to be exempted from the state auditor. But it's not a given that they're going to get that exemption. So what this bill does is allows the counties to opt out of the state auditor and go to a private auditing firm, a private CPA firm, to have their audit conducted. What you'll see in the when we were at state government.
I'm going to pause you right there, Representative Howe. Members, we have a quorum. State government finance meeting is officially underway. I think Representative Albright, will you move the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Albright, move the minutes for March 4th, 2015. All those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes for March 4th, 2015 have been approved. Members, we have before us today House File 495. Representative Howe, do you want to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, but before I move it, where's the next stop for this bill?
We're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill.
All right. Then, Madam Chair, I move the House File 495 to be for possible inclusion in the state government finance omnibus bill.
Okay. And right now, members, Representative Howe is explaining his delete everything amendment. Representative Howe, would you like to move your delete everything amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the DE2 amendment.
Representative Howe moves the DE2 amendment. Members, that's in your packet. And Representative Howe just explained that currently counties can apply for a three-year exemption, and you were going on to explain a little bit more. If you could take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And basically what we did was, during the last committee hearing, it was pointed out that the language was archaic and pretty old. So it was suggested that we, instead of adding to the archaic language, Representative Nelson believed that we should update it. So I have to give kudos to Mr. Shepherd for cleaning up the language and get it in the language of today. And hopefully, and we conferred with Mr. Mark Kerr from the State Auditor's Office. Hopefully we didn't miss anything to put this together. But so basically what the delete all amendment puts it in today's language, and it allows counties to opt out of the state auditor's audit and allows them to go to a private CPA firm if they so choose. There is a pre-notification period, so the auditor knows that this is going to happen, and it allows them to do their budgeting for the prior year. So it allows the state auditor prior notice so they can work on their finance piece, and it also allows the counties then to prepare for a private auditing firm and get someone online to do that. So that's the crux of the bill, and I guess now, I suppose, since the DE2 amendment is before us, I move to pass the DE2 amendment.
Members, let's get the bill in order that the author prefers. So all those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Well, you know what? I forgot to ask if there's any input on the DE2. If there's not, I'm going to let this motion go. Is there any public input on the DE2 amendment? If not, okay, we're good to go. So that is passed, the DE2 amendment. And Representative Howe, do you have any testifiers?
No. I do have a testifier, Ms. and I, Miss Carolyn
Holmstead
from Goodhue County.
Okay. And while she's coming up, Mr. Shepherd, did you want to add anything as far as cleaning up the language at all? Okay, very good. And is it Holmstead or Olmstead?
H-O-L-M-S-T-E-N.
Perfect. Thank you, Ms. Holmstead. And you state your name for the record and then who you represent.
Carolyn Holmstead from Goodhue County.
Okay, very good. Proceed, please.
Thank you very much. Some of you heard me speak last week at the GovOp committee meeting testifying about this bill. And as a county, we look at our audit every year, and we are required to go through the state as Representative Howe indicated. We'd like the option, like cities have, like school districts have, to select to work with a private firm. Not any different than if you go to a doctor or an accountant and want to have the opportunity to find someone you're comfortable with, you feel are charging you appropriate fees, and you expect them to do the professional services. This isn't any different than that. I'd like you to consider passage of the bill on four main points. Number one is cost, and we have done an informal survey, which the Office of the State Auditor also has seen. They requested to look at that survey after last week's testimony. And there are people in their counties that say, we're happy with the state auditor, that's fine. There are others that say, we believe our costs would be less expensive should we have the opportunity to go with a private sector firm. County audits run $25,000 to $70,000. Hennepin County, Ramsey County obviously are going to be more expensive than that. But it is a cost to our taxpayers, and we believe that we'd like to give them the opportunity to not have to pay as much, which could be the case with a private firm. Second point is consistency. Like we've all said, cities, school districts, why should counties be handled differently? And some counties are told by the state auditor's office, go ahead. And the state auditor's office has also closed offices. Northern Minnesota, if you look at it, doesn't have as many offices available. And former employees have branched out, started their own firms, and they now audit counties. So it's not like private firms aren't doing it, aren't capable of doing it. One of the points that we've heard in the past is there's a lot of federal money and state money that goes through counties, and we want to make sure that that is handled correctly. That's fine, but any other firm is going to have to make sure it's handled correctly as well. And some counties are given the opportunity to have the private firm look at that. So consistency is a big, big point that we, as I talk to other county auditors, are concerned about. Third is timeliness. Audits all have to be done by the end of September. We have staff, and especially in small offices, we don't have a lot of staff. And it's hard to get everybody's schedules to jive, so sometimes it takes longer. But it seems like things always get to be a bottleneck when they get into the actual review process that has to take place in St. Paul. So the field work might be done early on, but the timeliness of getting that audit back out, it tends to sit in St. Paul a lot. We don't know the story, we don't know the details of that, but it's a frustration on our end to think we're going to have our work done and then it sits and sits and sits for months before the actual release of the audit. And then the fourth point is quality. Everybody that does an audit, if you're a licensed CPA, has to follow the same generally accepted auditing standards. And these are put out by the Comptroller of the United States. So it's not like one firm isn't going to do the same quality of work as the other. In addition to that, the state auditor has the opportunity and does review the audits done by the private firms for a fee of about $600. It's been the latest going rate. So everybody's happy with that, and they're fine with that. Nobody objects to it. So the quality of the audit shouldn't be any different. The state auditor herself has indicated in the past, an audit is an audit is an audit. You do the review, you do the document checking, all the steps have to be done the same way, whether it's a private or that office. We've requested in the past to be released a number of times, as has been indicated. Sometimes they say, well, gee, you have to wait for the 3 years back to your professional doctor or accountant. You know, do you go and have to ask them if you want to go to somebody else and you have to wait 3 years? It's a frustrating piece from our end. And some of you may know, and I mentioned this last time, that in 2011, this bill or something similar to it was brought forth, and it was passed by the House, it was passed by the Senate, and then it was vetoed by the governor during the summer session. So, you know, there has been support for this in the past. we'd like you to consider it again. We don't think it's anything unusual. The private sector may actually free up the state auditor's office to do some of the other things that they would like to get taken care of. So please consider this bill on the behalf of all of your taxpaying constituents. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Homestead. If you can stick around, is there anybody else that wishes to testify for or with concerns on this bill? Okay. Seeing none, members, questions? Representative Johnson. Auditor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Howe, who's requesting this legislation at this point? And it's fine if you're requesting it. I don't care one way or the other. But I was just curious as to the origin or what the thinking was on it.
Representative Howe.
Well, I carried this bill. I don't exactly know if anyone was pushing the bill, but I carried the bill. I think it's a good idea. I'm all for local control and giving them that option, so that's where it came from.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Homestead?
Yes.
When did this bill move forward before through the legislature?
2011.
Ms. Homestead?
Excuse me.
Madam Chair?
Representative Johnson.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said Representative Johnson.
Oh, when did this matter move through the legislature, and you said 2011?
2011.
And it passed the House and Senate and was vetoed at that time?
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And can you tell me a little bit more about the process to request in the three-year time frame?
Ms. Homestead.
And what the problem is with
Thank
that, just
you.
So I understand a little more clearly.
We've requested in the past, and we send a letter to the state auditor's office and say we'd like to be released for the upcoming audit. And we've sent ours usually in fall. They do this every 3 years in spring. So last fall when we sent in, they said we'll get back to you in spring when we decide what we're going to do. We have been told that, no, we don't want to release you. And then I've inquired further. One time it was because, as many of you are aware, the driver awareness program that many counties did, and there's been a lot of talk about that within the legislature. Because the Goodhue County Sheriff's Department and commissioners decided to continue with that program until all of that got resolved, they said, no, we don't want you to be released because you're part of that program. Okay, but is that a justifiable reason, as it's a big state discussion? Another time it was just, we'll be deciding in the next 3 years and your timing isn't quite right. So in the fiscal report today, I noticed some of the things, you know, that they do have the opportunity and they can decide whatever they want to. But we don't quite feel comfortable with the reasons that were denied, and not everybody's requesting it. There are, as part of this informal survey that has been done, there are counties that have been denied for, again, the timing issue, what the specifics are, and some of them I don't know. If the state auditor is very uncomfortable with that, they can still review the audit done by the private firm. So it's a real frustrating piece, especially when some counties were told, we're not going to do you anymore, and other cities and schools just can hire anybody they want.
Right. Representative Johnson. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see this bill has a delete all and has been changed from before. But what's different in this bill from 2011? How would you expect a different end result now than in the past?
Representative Howe.
Well, I believe the timing is different. I also believe that the fiscal note has changed quite substantially, because I think they took a worst case scenario the last time. This time it's got a very minimal impact, as far as, because I think they took a more reasonable approach. I don't believe everyone, all the counties, are going to choose to switch over to a private CPA firm. I think they took a more reasonable approach and said possibly about 20% may change, because many counties are comfortable with the process. This just gives them an option. So I think that fiscal note will play a big role in to whether this bill will be successful this year or not.
Representative Lane.
Thank you. However, there is a difference in the audits that we do of our local governments as opposed to an audit in the private sector. These are audits of taxpayer dollars, and we have a uniform way in which we are watching over those. I'm concerned that as we try to privatize these more and more, that we may find ourselves coming back someday wishing to put them all under one uniform way. So I'm still carrying some concerns about this. Thank you.
Well, Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In response to that, cities and school districts are all taxpayer dollars also, and they are opted to do private. They can do a private CPA. The other thing that I'm concerned about, that I'd like to see the actual state auditor, I'll wait till he's done. The other thing I'm concerned about, and I think the state auditor would be allowed to do more of, is the review of the audits. Because right now, we're all human. Mm-hmm. We do audits. Everyone has to do the audits using the same format and the same process. The question I have is, the state auditor reviews audits that are conducted by the private CPA firms of cities and school districts. Who's reviewing the state auditor's audits? And we all need to be checked up on. I think if this would happen, it would allow the state auditor to do more review of audits, and we'd have a better system and a more checks and balance.
Representative Lane, in response to that?
Just one last comment. The difference, I think, would be that the counties are all an administrative arm of the governor, and whichever governor that is, there may be some concern of maintaining that personal control over this.
Representative Howe?
I think it's been stated numerous times. Every audit has to follow the same procedures and the same guidelines and the same accounting practices, so I don't know where there would be influence on that, because they all have to do it the same process. So I don't know if my testifier has more to add on that. But
Ms. Homestead?
Generally accepted accounting standards to stay licensed have to be followed. So, and you have to go through your own checks with that, and I don't see any concern.
Okay. I've got Detmer and Carlson that have questions, and then I'm going to ask the state auditor to come down because I have some questions for them. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, or to Representative Howell. I believe there's 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. Any idea, was there a survey or anything that indicated what the counties generally would choose? Was there any survey taken of the all 87 counties?
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe in the fiscal note it says currently out of the 87 counties, 59 are currently audited by the state auditor. They believe possibly by the state auditor believes if another 20% possibly could choose. So that's the numbers that are in the fiscal note, and I think that's a reasonable assessment of what possibly could happen.
Representative.
Yeah. Madam Chair, just follow up. I guess I believe the counties are looking at this, and they can probably figure a better way of putting taxpayers' money to use and saving some money for their taxpayers. And you know, I think I believe that the control, the local control, is the way to go. So, thank you.
Okay. Representative Carlson?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I have a question of Representative Howell. We adopted a major amendment after you walked through the bill. And did you present the bill from the standpoint of the amendment? And I'm trying to figure out how this amendment changes the bill after it was reported out of government op. That's my first question. I may have one or two more.
Representative Howe. I don't know if Representative Carlson was here right away.
I was here about 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, were you? Okay. So you heard it all.
Here.
Okay, good. Representative Howe.
No, when I, Madam Chair, I listened to him when he walked us through, and then we adopted the amendment, and I wasn't sure if the presentation was based on the amendment that we were about to adopt or if it was based on the original bill. And what I want to get a handle on is really kind of my bottom line question is how the amendment changes the bill as it was reported out of government op.
Representative.
Because there's a lot of language here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Carlson. Actually, all it does, it was It was brought up by Representative Nelson that it was an archaic language, and it was tough when we added the piece on the bottom to amend it to allow counties to opt out. It got to be tough to follow, so it was suggested that we rewrite and put it in there and put it all in common language, easy to understand. So that's what it was, and it also asked to ensure that the audit was public and could be open to the legislature and the public to review, and they had to follow the same standards and practices of the state audit as far as access to this information and the storage of the data. So that's what we did, was we added that piece in that was requested by Representative Nelson, and then Mr. Shepard rewrote it with the assistance of the state auditor's office to get it in the format that was acceptable to everyone.
Okay, so Madam Chair, Representative House, so that's the substantive change. Pardon?
Go ahead. Representative Carlson.
I indicated, Madam Chair, that I might have a follow-up, and that's what I was doing.
I was just going to suggest that maybe we have a Mr. Shepard to it, too, if that's
all. Well, I think, Madam Chair, he seems to have answered, or somehow answered the question I was trying to get at, what the difference was between government up and here, and you said basically an updating of the statute, and then there was that one substantive change, basically, that you were indicating. So I think he answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess maybe I can shed some light on it. The last committee, the amendment I had dealt with the accountability and the openness of the information from private auditors and tried to put them on par with our state auditor, because the state auditor, everything they do is public information, and there wasn't that same assurance in the original language of the statute. And with the amendment, with the bill that was the original 495, it basically didn't do that. Would have been two different standards. If you had a private auditor, a lot of that information wouldn't be open to the public, to the taxpayers of the counties that were asking for this. And my amendment was to make them have to have the same disclosure as the state auditor has. Mm-hmm. And the language, putting it on, there was some problems with it. Like I said, we talked about it was a little bit clunky, the language. The Representative Howell, and I don't know if this goes as far as everything that I would have liked in it, but basically that's what they rewrote it to make it all mesh better together, is what the idea that Representative Howell has here. I'm not sure if it does, but...
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, and to that point, thank you, Madam Chair. Subdivision 4 is where that audit availability data is. So that's that piece that we were looking for to make it subject to the same classifications and openness as the state auditor's information. So that's where it is.
Okay. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So would you expect the state auditor to audit what the CPA firms do, the private CPA firms do for the counties? You mentioned that you would expect them to have more time to audit or review those audits?
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And they currently do review of some of the audits that are out there, and I would hope that they just kind of expand some of that and continue to do that.
How would that?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would that lead to some more additional costs, or would there be cost savings from having the private CPA firms do it, even if they audit those audits?
Is that, Ms. Homestead, do you want to speak to that?
The cost for the actual audit itself tends to be less expensive when it's done by a private firm, and the state auditor's office charges $600, and the difference between the price of the private and the state right now is more than $600. So for the local side of things, the cost would still tend to be less expensive in many cases. Some cases it might not be.
Thank you.
Representative Schultz. Is somebody from the state auditor's office here? They can come and speak.
Madam Madam Chair?
If you could please state your name for the record. And who
my name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the Director of Budget, Finance, and Technology for the Office of State Auditor.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Lindemann. I have a question. So how many schools or cities opt for the private option?
I'm sorry.
How many cities and schools that are exempt, they're exempt from having to go through the state auditor, how many of them take advantage of that option and how many use your services?
You know, I don't have the exact number. I know there's approximately 855 cities in the state. The state auditor audits cities of the first class, so Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth are the three cities that the office audits. The remainder are audited by private CPA firms.
Okay. And I don't know if you know this or maybe Mr. Shepherd knows. Has that always been the case that we've exempted cities and schools, or is that something that's relatively new?
I'm not sure exactly what the history on that is.
Mr. Shepherd, do you know by chance?
Madam Chair, the whole in 1973, the whole relationship of who does local audits was substantially rewritten. They used to be done by someone called the public examiner. Mm. And so I believe that it has been that way since at least 1973.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. That's it for me for Mr. Lindemann, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Mr. Lindemann, too. I have a letter here that was in everybody's packet from the Office of the State Auditor, and in it says, currently the Audit Division, which makes up approximately 75% of the Office of the State Auditor's operation, is accounted for as an enterprise fund. Now, when I hear enterprise fund, I think of two things. One, that it's competitive with other activities in the private sector as well, and that it tends to be a income-producing agency as well. Is that kind of your understanding of this being an enterprise fund?
Mr. Lindemann.
Madam Chair, Representative, the State Auditor's Office in 2013, I believe, got the authority to switch from a general fund appropriation to an enterprise. In the early 80s, I believe, the State Auditor was a revolving fund at that time and was moved into the general fund. So the advantage we have by being an enterprise fund is that it allows us to retain the dollars. When we're under the general fund, we were required to charge for our services, but those dollars came back into the general fund as non-dedicated revenue. So if we over-recovered, it didn't really matter. Those would just go to the general fund. By being an enterprise fund, it allows us to take those dollars and keep them and use those to stabilize audit rates in the future. But the objective of the enterprise fund is to not make a profit or a loss. Right. It's just to come as close to coming, returning a zero net income as possible.
Representative Petersburg.
Now, thank you. As a follow-up question then, Madam Chair, if that's designed to be an opportunity for us to stabilize those fees, and we're hearing that those that have to produce profit, this private CPAs, are underbidding the costs from the state auditor, is there an issue here that we need to be working on or not? I'm concerned about the fact that we say if we have less counties taking on the audit from the state, that it'll increase the cost to those that are still left. That's also in this letter. And it seems to me that if this is strictly a service-providing agency or group, if there are less audits, there are just less people to hire and so forth. So I'm just trying to get a handle on how we're not really being competitive with the general CPA firms.
Mr. Lindemann.
Madam Chair, Representative, the increase of cost to local governments that we continue to audit would just be really a factor of some fixed overhead costs that we would have. Those fixed overhead costs would vary depending on the degree of how many audits we do. So in the example that we provided, it was really difficult to determine how many counties would choose to take this option. So we took 20% reduction in billable hours as an illustrative approach. But there's certain fixed costs, such as the review, the staff who do the audit reviews, the technology that we have in place, the staff that do that support. There's certain costs that would not be able to be disappeared, at least in the short term, would not disappear. So As a result, we're required to recover all our costs, so we'd have to increase rates on the remaining clients in order to make sure that we return as close to as possible a zero net income.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I think we'll keep working on that as well. But the final question just refers to something that was alluded to earlier. Can you tell me, in your understanding or experience, is there a difference between what a private CPA audit would be and what your office would be doing? Are there any procedures that would be different from one to the other?
Mr. Lindeman.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know if I feel qualified to answer that question. It'd be a really difficult question. It's been a number of years since I was in the field auditing, so it's been at least 15 years since I was an auditor, so I would not feel comfortable answering that question.
And Representative Howe, I believe that you drafted the bill so that it would be equivalent. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Lindeman, okay. We'll give you some reasons why counties are different than, and the monies that they oversee are different than school districts and cities. I mean, the thing that comes to mind is the counties are who we put our child welfare and that kind of money, more federal dollars in than school districts or cities. I mean, what are some differences and why would it be more important that the state look at that as opposed to a private auditor? I mean, there might be, what are the differences?
Mr. Lindeman.
Madam Chair, Representative, my function in the office is the finance director, so I'm not really qualified, I don't think, to discuss the policy aspects of this. The state auditor did provide a letter, and I don't think I could answer the question any better than what's illustrated in that letter about the reasons why the audits are performed by the state auditor rather than a private CPA firm.
Okay. Representative Nelson, follow up. All right. Any other questions? Any comments from the audience? Anyone? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lindeman, I'm reading in the same letter that our Representative Petersburg was referencing, and there's a comment in here that says there is already a process for counties to request work with private CPA firm once every 3 years. My question is, does the auditor's office ever deny any of these requests?
Mr. Lindeman.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not sure exactly who has been released and who is not. I'm not part of that process, so I can take that question back to the state auditor and get you an answer from our office, if that would be helpful.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm not sure who to pose this question to, but there is an assumption that if you have a private auditing firm, it's going to cost less, but I don't really see anything that gives any kind of a benchmark in terms of whether that's actually fact or not. There is in the third paragraph of the letter here that there is an audit that sometimes would be done once every third year. Could anybody tell us how the cost of that audit might compare to what the state auditor would have charged previously? It seems the underlying justification for the bill is that somehow it would cost less, and I don't really know that to be a fact if we don't have something that compares the actual cost of a couple of audits in the same place.
Ms. Homestead, do you want to step up?
Thank you. There have been, as I indicated, informal surveys where counties have said, I was given the opportunity to go from the state auditor's office to the private sector, and there was a substantial drop. As I also said, there have been times when it's not. My testimony, I indicated there are four factors, cost being just one of them: timeliness, consistency, and my last factor, of course I don't remember, quality. So it's more than just cost as the objective from the county standpoint. If I may also address Representative Anderson's question previously, when you asked have counties been denied, number of counties, yes, have been denied when they've been requested to be released.
Madam Chair, I wasn't totally done. I heard your testimony earlier because, as I indicated, I was here early. but the reference to informal is what's kind of throwing me a curve, and I understand you talked about other issues, timeliness and what have you, and I'm not sure exactly how to measure that either, but I guess what I was asking is something a little bit more solid than that. You know, the when we say informal, that kind of seems like there's sort of an assumption that goes with that, that perhaps it would be cheaper. But I don't really know unless you've actually had comparative bids or something that would really show that to be true or accurate. And that's what I was wondering, if anybody had any information like that. Now the state auditor bill's back, so you would have some sort of a rate, I assume, an hourly rate or whatever, Madam Chair, and how that might compare with perhaps the private sector. I mean, if we move forward with it, I'd like to know that the reasons that we're moving forward are solid footing and not just basically informal assumptions.
Ms. Homestead, do you want to respond, or Representative Howe?
In this survey that the auditor's office has as well, an example, Lincoln County indicated that it was released for the years 12, 13, and 14. We have made the request to be released for 15, 16, and 17, but have not gotten an answer at this point. This was a survey done last fall. The answers will come this spring. The communication is much better with the private auditors. The cost is $10,000 to $15,000 less than we had been paying for the audit. That's just one example. There are others as well.
Okay, Madam Chair, that's helpful because I wanted to know if we were just operating under an assumption or if there was actually some facts to support it on the cost side. And that's one county then that says that it was actually $10,000 less. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Howe.
Representative Carlson, I think in that third paragraph where it talks about the 3 years, what they do is they request every 3 years to get released. So it's a three-year period to get released from. And you only request every 3 years. So I think that's the difference in the three-year period there. It's not that they get every 3 years a different audit. It's just that every 3 years they can request to be released. And I think that's the...
Yeah, Madam Chair, I understood that.
Okay. Yeah. And I think for Mr. Lindemann, I think it would be helpful to, if you can go back and ask how many counties have been denied over the years for their request. That would just be helpful data, I think, for the committee to know. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do they get audited every year, or do they get audited every 3 years?
Representative Howe or Mr. Lindemann?
Counties are audited every year. So it's a financial audit and a compliance audit that is performed, Madam Chair.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that when they get released every 3 years, they have 3 years to use a private firm. And could you also tell me, do they discount, do the private CPA firms discount initially, and then they get the business, and do those rates go up? So do you have an example where counties use a private CPA firm multiple times, and there's an increase in their fees compared to a larger increase than you would see if the state did the audit?
Ms. Homestead?
That I can't give you specifically. I'd have to read through all of these, which I could do. One county did indicate that because a number of counties agreed to go with the same private firm, large numbers does things, and so those three or four counties received a rate that they felt was less than the state would have been because they all went together. I would, you know, as a private sector business, if you can commit to 3 years, are you going to be able to offer somebody a better rate than maybe not? You know, that's up to the private business.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Howell, earlier you mentioned a figure of 59 out of 87 counties. And refresh my memory, is that 59 counties that are currently using private CPA firms?
No, that's
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's 59 counties out of the 87 that currently are done by the state auditor.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a hypothetical. Let's assume that all 87 counties decide to opt out and do the private. And my question to Mr. Lindemann, what would be the ramifications to the auditor's office if something like that were to happen? Because, again, coming back to the same letter from the stated auditor, she says that our duty is to represent the taxpayer's best interest.
Mr. Lindemann.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe that if all 87 counties chose to be audited by a CPA firm, someone other than the state auditor, that would really be devastating to our audit practice division. Of the 90,000 billable hours we have for 2014, 60,000 of those were for counties. So if we lost all the counties, it'd be really hard to maintain an audit operation. And then if any counties want to come back, it would be really difficult to recreate that audit operation.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, if that be the case, Mr. Lindemann, I'm finding that the ultimate result would be that this letter is basically defining control. And if we really had to dispense with a lot of the FTEs, it would be unfortunate for the department. I understand that. But again, it comes back down to the statement, our duty is to represent the taxpayer's best interest. So I don't know which side to really point fingers to in this, of which would really be saving us interest. I'm hearing about cost controls of how much we're charging or could be charging for the state's audits or a private. Okay, that's one side. But the other side is how many FTEs would we be saving the taxpayers in this? And I'm not saying that to be critical of your department, but I'm just following through on this letter opposing the bill.
Mr. Lindemann, did you want to comment to that, or?
No, I don't have anything to add.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I do believe that there's counties out there that are satisfied with the state, and I don't believe they're going to change. I think it's used to having it done there. So that scenario as it's possible. I just don't think it's a likely scenario.
Okay. We have Representative Anderson.
I'm sorry. Yeah, and I understood that. That's why I put that out there as a hypothetical, just to say there's the opposite extremes. I can't imagine everybody going to leaving the state auditors. But again, to throw that out there, just so we could see.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. Just from a municipal perspective, when we at the city that I was served as mayor had the opportunity and ability to allow market forces to come to bear using outside CPA firms, we actually found that we were able to return money to the taxpayer by not having to levy for a higher priced audit. Quality was still the same. They still had to maintain the same standards as they would have with another audit firm, and we were able to say to our constituents that the audit is the same level of quality, it just cost you less. So I think this is a fine option.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just thinking here, my question here, with the discussions going on, I guess the one question is, you know, we have a state auditor to make sure that our taxpayer dollars are spent wisely and they're not absconded with in a way that they're not supposed to be done. And if we got this state auditor's department, is if all the counties leave, and I don't believe that it would happen, but if a lot of them leave and we have to charge more money, we're either going to have to put more money in from the general fund to fund the department to have those on, because we do need those eyes and ears looking at our state dollars. It's not just the cheapest. You know, so we don't want to buy the cheapest car or the cheapest road and have it fall apart. That's not wise spending of our taxpayer dollars also. We want to make sure that they're being spent wisely, they're being spent in the way they're supposed to be spent, and not absconded with improperly. I mean, so I guess that's the problem we have here, or the thing we have to look at is, you know, where is that going to come down, and we do need to have a state auditor. It's in the constitutional office. All we need is one scandal, and all of a sudden we're screaming, why isn't state auditor doing their job? Well, if we got the department and they don't have anyone to look at it or to look at the audits that are coming in from the, from these other outside auditors, it's still the responsibility of the state auditor to make sure that happens. So either we do it through the enterprise fund like we're doing it now where they charge and they recover the costs and pay, or we're going to have to fund that department out of our general fund dollars. So, I mean, it's what we're going to look at. I mean, that's why they switched them to the enterprise fund. You recover your dollars. You're bringing this money in. Keep it in that department where you're doing it. And instead of putting it in the general fund and then charging it back, it gave some control on keeping the cost down. So, I mean, I could have concerns about this bill going forward, but I guess that's more my comment than a question.
Well, Representative Nelson, maybe another approach to the situation, though, is saying to the auditor's office they can't charge any more than what a private audit firm would charge, so people would be able to go out and get a bid, and they got a bid that was lower than the state auditor was providing. We should maybe let the counties then be able to do that. But, you know, that I don't think that Ms. Homestead, she highlighted some other issues. I think there's some concerns about timeliness and just the overall quality and whatnot. So I think this opens up a bigger issue that I think that we're seeing here today. But I think this is a helpful conversation for us to have. So I would just be curious, Mr. Lindemann, do you ever go back on the cities and the school districts that are exempt from having the state auditor audit their books? How do you go back and look at those individuals that have gone with a private firm? How does that work? Can you explain that for me?
Madam Chair, we have multiple divisions within the office. Our government information division does collect financial information from all the local governments in the state and summarizes that up for legislature to, for policymakers such as the legislature to use. So in that process, we do look at them. We do have a process where we collect all the single audit information from all the local governments that have money that comes through the state. So the federal findings are summarized up through there. There is a process for local governments to petition the state auditor to come in and do either a full audit or an agreed upon procedures type of audit for those local governments, and that happens quite often. I guess those are the different ways that I'm aware of that we do that.
And Mr. Lindemann, you know, I'm just curious. So you do all the cities of a first class. So you do the school districts, I assume, of the cities of the first class too, or no?
Madam Chair, no, we don't.
Okay. All right. But you do review them at some point and look at their books periodically. Do you know how often?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware.
Okay. All righty. Can you get that information for us?
I can take that back to the office. And
yeah, that would be helpful. I have got Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think if I remember right, the smallest county has about 9 or 10,000 people in, and there's a great variance between that and one who has millions in it. And if we have 87 different auditing firms taking it hypothetically to its ultimate conclusion, I don't know how you'd get any uniformity in reporting with that many or 50 different counties doing it that we need for state to gather statewide information in comparison. I just think you're opening up a can of worms here. If you've got a 9,000, I think that's right. Anybody got a correction on that? 9 or 10,000 is one of the smaller counties. I think I could remember if I tried hard which those are. But it's a heck of a lot easier to hire a auditing firm for a very small county relative to Hennepin or Ramsey or one of the other large counties.
Representative Howe, you want to respond?
Well, I think we've already had testimony, Madam Chair, that indicates that everyone has to use the same standard auditing practices. So to think that we're going to have multiple different types of information and different formats coming in, they all required to use the same format and the same auditing practices. So no matter who does the audit, whether it's state or private or different private auditing firms, they all have to use the same format and the same practices. So I don't foresee that that being an issue to be able to compare audits. Now, I will say that I do agree with you that the smaller counties should be a cheaper way to go, but I believe that we should look at the local control option, and if something looks like it's not going to work, if the local county folks don't like what they're seeing on their audits, I know the state will probably do the review of those audits, but the other piece is they can tell their county boards that, hey, change your auditor. In fact, I know a school district that the school board decided that, hey, they needed to change their auditor because they had the same auditor far, far too long. And they had their eyes open when they changed, because I think their financial director, their financial secretary went to jail for it. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that too.
Representative Earhart, any follow-up? Okay. I have Representative Kahn.
Okay. Well, as a resident historian of this group, I should say something about the legislative auditor funding. The state auditor's funding. State auditor was originally funded totally outside of the general fund. I don't know that we called it enterprise funds in this day, but it was just completely responsible for deciding what the rates were and collecting the money and doing its budget. Then when our good friend Arnie Carlson was state auditor, one of the things he did when the auditor's office moved into new headquarters, he used part of this without any legislative authorization to totally refurbish his office, including things which I now totally support, but at the time thought was sort of awful, a fitness center and showers and all kinds of things like that, which I think we should have in every building that we have now. But at the time, we objected. You know, I think Mark Shepard could probably tell this much better than I can. At the time, we objected to this happening without legislative insight. So that was the time that we totally removed the auditor's office from something totally independent that collected its fees and decided what it did to being controlled by the state general fund and having to present a budget to the legislature.
Okay.
As you know, fortunately, Arnie Carlson was auditor, not governor at the time, so there was nothing he could really do about it. But he probably still remembers the whole thing if you ask him about it. Anyway, and so then at some point when we were dealing with general fund problems, we then went back to the other, to the old way, I think, deciding that maybe Rebecca Otto would be less adventurous than Arnie Carlson was.
Okay. I have Representative Schultz, Nash, Albright, and then we're going to move on the bill. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Olmstead, you mentioned that some counties work together and get a discount for volume purchasing. I think that's what we try to do with the state auditor, is we get, you know, if you're doing multiple, many, many, many audits, there's probably a lot you learn from doing those and you become really efficient. And so you get that volume discount by using the state auditor. I think that was maybe the intent of doing that. But if this bill does go forward, I'd like to see the cost savings over time reported to this committee, if there are cost savings over time, over a six-year period.
Okay. Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, I wanted to talk about the use of the word abscond in a comment that was just made recently by Representative Nelson. I just wanted to make sure that we're not saying that counties who are trying to use an outside auditing firm are trying to, as the word abscond indicates, leave hurriedly, secretly, typically to avoid detection or arrest from an unlawful action. If they were to go down this road of trying to conserve their county taxpayers' dollars to get a better price for the same auditing that we've already heard, they have to comply to the certain audit levels that the state auditor would as well. That I just think that that's very it's a big word to use, and I think that the other alternative that we didn't talk about was that maybe those people that are currently working for the state, if all 87 counties to Representative Anderson's comment were to choose to go to an outside firm, we could actually just not keep them on the roll, keep hiring them. There are alternatives to employment if we don't have a need for that work. And I just think that, you know, I always preached as mayor, and I still do now, that it's not our money that we spend. It's not our money that's being absconded with. It's the taxpayers' money. And if there is a cheaper function or a cheaper alternative out there with a private firm, that we should allow counties, much like we do cities of other than the first class, to take advantage of that.
We have a rule that if your name is mentioned, you get to respond. And Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I in no way believe that we have a vast number of employees in our counties or in the cities or the or townships and school boards out there that are doing that. But all it takes is one bad apple, one individual doing that. We hear this from time to time where people, even after audits, or they get caught after multiple years of stealing money from the state or stealing money from the counties or stealing money from a school district. And it happens. And I'd say the vast majority, 99.9% of our employees out there, are good and diligent stewards of our taxpayer dollars. So I'm not in any way saying that we have to worry about that. But ultimately, as a constitutional office, the state auditor is responsible for making sure our taxpayer dollars get spent in the proper fashion. And if we remove all the employees from the state auditor's office and make it a shell of an office, they cannot do their duty and do their job to make sure that that stuff happens. And so that's the concern I have here, and that's where I was going with that. Things happen. I mean, I come from a union background, and unions are required every year to have an audit that goes to the federal government that's posted, and they're required to do this to fill out the forms that they have to fill out for the federal government. And we hear from time to time across the nation of some public or some union official that gets caught absconding with union funds and or misspending union funds. And so, I mean, it happens. The vast majority of them don't do it, but that's where I was going with this. It's ultimately the auditor's responsibility to make sure that the taxpayer dollars are spent properly, and cheapest is not always best when we're spending taxpayer dollars, because we have to look at the long term, not just the initial cost. And so that's the concern I have. I mean, we have to make sure that we have a vibrant office there so that they can do their job, because even if the counties are all audited by private firms, it's still the auditor's, state auditor's responsibility to make sure that those funds are spent properly. That's make sure that the audits that they're getting in, they have to review them. They're going to have people in that office to do that. And so we can't. So either if we're not doing it, funding them through an enterprise fund, they're still going to have people there doing their job. And so if we're looking at doing this because that they're charging too much to make up their costs, then we're going to have to fund them a different way, because they're still going to have people there doing their job.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions. Representative Howell, in your bill that you've authored, is it obligatory or mandatory that a county solicit an outside firm for a proposal to provide the audit, or could they continue to use the state auditor for that function?
Representative Howell.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, no, it purely gives the county the option. They can remain with the state if they so choose. It just gives them the option to go out to this private CPA firm. So there's no mandate.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Ms. Holmston, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. In your opinion, from the work that you've received from independent CFP firms, accounting firms, has the credentialing been any different from that or from those individuals that have served those purposes as it would be compared to those that are on the board and part of the state auditor function?
Ms. Homestead?
Representative Albright, no, the credentialing is the same. From my understanding, anybody that practices as a CPA and as a firm has to go through the same licensing procedures.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I think with those two questions, I'm not going to debate the concerns about the state auditor's function, but I want to make one observation. I think, Mr. Lindeman, what you might be hearing from the questions around the table as well as from the piece of legislation before us is that I don't know that the state auditor's facility is being questioned, other than I think we're sending you a clear and strong message that you may not be as responsive to the needs of the counties as the counties are demanding of you, from a standpoint of to the four tenants that the testifier alluded to. If there's any function that it requires credentialing of a standardized perspective, I think you could, it would be very difficult for you to argue that the same level and professionalism that is provided within the auditor's office, it can be provided outside of that office. And so to the extent that this legislation is before us today, it is because of the very fact that the state auditor's function and that department has not been responsive to the needs of the county. And so if you were to take anything away from your visit to here, back to your office, I would encourage you to relay the concerns that the auditor is not being responsive in a forthright manner in terms of costing, because we also have to be, as it's been said on in the comments from a number of people, we have to be good stewards and a fiduciary of the taxpayer dollar. And that is not always that it is the cheapest. I understand that. But it also has to be made sure that we are being responsive, that we are providing value, and it isn't just about that we have to maintain. We have to respond, whether it be through a budget or through the number of people to respond. Technology expands, which means that the number of people may necessitate less of them for the sake of getting the same work done or better work done as you would complete more reviews. So I would just encourage those sentiments to be sent along with you back to your office today.
Okay. Members, Representative Howe renews his motion to lay over House File 495 as amended for possible inclusion in the state government omnibus bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The bill is laid over for House File 495 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Howe. Thank you, Ms. Homestead. Thank you, Mr. Lindeman. You are next on deck. Mr. Lindeman, you're going to speak to your government's governor's request and give a moment here to clear the table.
I could ask Mark. It's always easier to do that.
Mr. Lindeman.
Madam Chair, again, my name is Matt Lindeman. I'm the Director of Budget, Finance, and Technology for the Office of the State Auditor, and I'll be reviewing the three change items that are included as part of our budget. The first change item relates to staff retention. The purpose of this item is to retain the current staff that is funded by our general fund direct appropriation. The change item is based on salary projections provided to us by the Minnesota Management and Budget, which reflects estimated wage adjustments. 88% of the expenditures of the office are for people who perform oversight work of over $20 billion in tax dollars spent by local governments. We are a very lean organization and need to keep the staff we have to meet the mission, to meet our mission and statutory duties. The second change item relates to a new technology staff position. Over 4,000 units of local government report electronically to the Office of State Auditor annually. We are requesting one FTE to work on programming and database work. More and more, we are doing everything electronically. This person would allow us to build in greater efficiencies for both our staff and the thousands of local governments that work with us each year. It will also increase financial transparencies to citizens by moving us to a more visual display of financial data and update our website, which is our primary vehicle for transparency. Our current website design is about 8 years old. Finally, the third change item is for an infrastructure stress tool. This change item is a request for one-time funds to hire a consultant to assist in identifying existing data and creating a tool to display infrastructure needs in Minnesota. We want to create a visual representation of state and local government assets in Minnesota, such as roads, bridges, water facilities, wastewater facilities, and energy facilities, and indicate their status, such as needing maintenance or being in need of replacement. We plan to display the information on a map and make it a one-stop shop for this information. We envision the users being able to hover their mouse over the map and to select the community and get the information they need. The map may also be color-coded based on the needs of a project. People have been asking for this this tool, and there's a need. We believe it would be a great tool for policymakers such as the legislature and as well as for citizens. Instead of having to go through complicated spreadsheets and large reports that contain information for only one type of infrastructure, you'd have a map of Minnesota with all types. The consultant would assist in identifying existing data, determining the best way to collect the data, and creating the tools to display the information. The tool would be built out over time and would present the information as received from the various sources. Madam Chair, those are our change items.
Mr. Lindemann, I've got a question for you. On the infrastructure change item that you're looking for, does that include roads? And if it does include roads, does that also, what kind of roads are we talking about?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that it would include collecting information from multiple state agencies, which would include the Department of Transportation, and putting that information out there. So I believe it would be all types of roads, that whatever information the Department of Transportation collects.
And do you know, Mr. Lindemann, if the Department of Transportation already has that data and it would just be a matter of them producing it publicly?
My understanding is they do have that information. The goal of this request is to develop a tool that would make it easy for people to see that information alongside information that's collected by other state agencies, such as PCA or other agencies, so that you'd have one place to go to get this information.
And Mr. Lindemann, I think, you know, thinking about Public Facilities Authority, I do believe that they publish what the priority list is for PFA. So this would be an addition to that. This would be kind of a doubling up then.
Madam Chair, I believe the objective here is to take that information also and put it all together instead of having it in disparate places, to put it all in one place.
Okay. And Mr. Lindemann, I'm going to change gears here a little bit. When you talk about the website upgrade and whatnot, are you guys under the purview of MNIT then?
Madam Chair, our the State Auditor's Office and all the constitutional offices were not part of the consolidation with MNIT. We do work with MNIT on many things. We're required to go through them, like for our internet connection. But if we were to use MNIT, and that would be one option, in many cases, it still costs money to have them do the work. So we would have to have an appropriation to do any work with MNIT if we were to use them.
And Mr. Lindemann, did you consult with MNIT in putting together the numbers for this proposal, or was this done independent of MNIT?
At one FTE, is that what you're talking about? Madam Chair, we did not go to MNIT to have them review it. It was just we looked at salary compensation information and used information from the Department of Administration.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, you took on exactly the direction of conversation that I was going to start, so I'll just follow up on it. When we were passing the MNIT consolidation bill, which I remind you was a bill that Representative Downey was the chief author of and I was the second author of, so I don't
take... If we remember nothing, we will remember that.
Okay. Yes. Governor Dayton, at some speech, maybe a State of the Union, said the greatest thing was seeing Downey and Kahn hugging at the end of the passage of that. But anyway, specifically, of course, in order to pass that, we exempted the constitutional offices, and we also exempted the legislature. But, you know, I think it's time to look at, so many of the questions you asked pointed to a more effective use of information if you're using the existing information. One of the specific things, when we went from 38 separate data silos to one data silos, was we went from allegedly 38 webmasters to essentially a central web facility. So, I don't know if we're ready to totally change the exemption process, but I think we ought to raise the questions seriously about what happens when these exempt, and remember that's including the legislature, which is part of it too, are not using what's available, particularly when they want to collect the information from all other agencies, which Minute is in charge of. So, I'm just following. You started it. I mean, you jumped on it right away, so I only have to just add a little bit.
And Representative Kahn, nothing prohibits any of us from doing that, right? There's nothing
right.
That, so...
But it's not...
State auditor could use Minute if they so choose.
Right. And the example, you know, it's hard to think when looking at what they're trying to do. It's hard to think that there aren't efficiencies in using Minute, or that the whole data picture wouldn't be better if we had it in one place.
Okay.
So,
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've got two questions, and they're kind of miles apart. But one is, the local governments currently have to. I think it's the GASB 34 standard where they have to track all their public utilities and all their equipment. And is this going to now, if we do that at the state level, is this going to require a mandate for those cities to transfer and provide that data to the state?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Lindemann.
Representative, the intent here is to just work with existing data that is already at the state level and bring it into a central spot, not to request more information from local governments.
Representative Howe.
Thank you. And that's what my concern was another unfunded mandate down to the county and city and school districts, so I wanted to make sure that wasn't going to happen. The other question I have is do you have a position or have a way... My concern is how does the cities, the counties, and the townships know who is credentialed out there? Does the state have a listing? I mean, I have to believe that they're all credentialed, and we have a database someplace that identifies all these credentialed CPAs, or is that not the case?
Mr. Lindemann.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe the Board of Accountancy maintains certification of CPAs in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Howe.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So the school districts or the counties could log on to that and identify that who they're getting for a private CPA firm is actually credentialed to do the work?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not aware. I don't know what they have available.
The reason I ask is when I brought up during the bill testimony is that there was a school district that used the same firm over and over again, and that person had lost their credential, but they didn't notify the school that they had lost their credential. And I remember a couple years ago when the state auditor was here, I kind of went down that same line of questioning: is how do you know these folks when they send in the data that it's that they're credentialed when they send it in, and they said, well, if it's in the correct format, we know that they're credentialed. Well, this person used to be credentialed. They knew the right format, but yeah, they had lost her credentialing, and there was a commingling between the financial secretary and the and the auditor and the CPA firm, and so goes. It's and that's why I'm at going down this line. I would like to see some way or somehow that either they send that information out or they have that way of knowing that this person lost their credentials, and I don't know how that happens and how they can check on it, but I guess I'm looking for a format and a way to have that done.
Mr. Lindemann?
Madam Chair, I guess I don't know how to answer that.
So. Oh, well, I mean, Representative Howell, you raise a very good point. I mean, there should, I agree, there should be some kind of notification that when an auditing firm is dropped off of the list as being credentialed. And I don't know who provides that function. So I think that's something that maybe we can look into a little bit more and figure that out at some point. And Mr. Shepherd, if I could task you with that, and you can give us some insight, not now, but at some point, if you could give us a little better idea of how that works. I've got Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is kind of a question, I think, just for us to ponder, and that is, I tend to be a financial person, so I like that everything's nice, neat, and organized. And as I've learned more and more about the Internet, I realize that the Internet and how we use it today is probably the most massive form of chaos that there can ever be, because there is no organization. And yet, our search engines and all the things that we use today are able to, at our fingertips, get us every information that we have. So the question to ponder and to pose is, is this really necessary if all you're doing is collecting data that's already out there, when a keystroke and a search will give that information to the general public? And so sometimes we think about things and try to put something that is currently in existence into something that's easier for us, when maybe that's not the direction that's really necessary. So I'm wondering about whether or not there is actually as big a need for what is being suggested here or not. And so I just pose that pondering question.
Mr. Lindemann, do you want to respond?
Madam Chair, Representative, I do know the state auditor has indicated to me that she's gotten a lot of support for the infrastructure, the request that a lot of people feel that there'd be a good, it'd be nice to have a centralized spot where this information is all collected and presented. I think other state agencies have indicated that. I don't have any personal knowledge of which ones those are, but I do know that she indicated that to me.
Representative Petersburg. Okay, I've got Representative Johnson, and then I've got some questions too. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hi, Ms. Lemon. Does your office provide any training on legal compliance and enforcement and that sort of thing to local governments in addition to the auditing itself?
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Representative, annually we're required to provide 80 hours of CPE to our own staff every 2 years. As part of that process, we put together a conference once a year where we invite local government officials to come to that, to one of the days of the training. Part of that would be legal compliance issues. We do have our legal staff do, for part of that day, go over the legal compliance manual, which our office is responsible for issuing. They talk about legal issues that are happening at the local level. So in addition to other accounting topics that are discussed there that are pertinent to local governments. So, and it provides continuing professional education for those local government officials that need to have it. So,
okay. Representative Johnson. Mr. Lindemann, you know, earlier we were talking about Representative Howe's bill, and the auditor has expressed concern that if everybody jumped on the bandwagon to get a private auditor, that would increase your, it would spread the overhead costs out to a smaller number of folks. Does that overhead cost, are you including staffing in that?
Madam Chair, so a certain amount of the overhead, so if you're looking at the increase in audit rates, There are certain individuals in our office that do reviews. We have a standard the quality assurance, a QA department, so that makes up about three individuals in our office. It would be difficult to reduce those positions. There's space, there's rental space that, depending on the number of staff that were reduced, if everybody jumped on the wagon, we would have to renegotiate leases, so to a certain degree that's variable, but if 20% left, I don't think that's enough for us to reduce the rental space we have. So it's a little bit of staffing, and it's a little bit of fixed costs such as rent.
And Mr. Lindemann, as I understood it, you are counting the overhead costs, that's part of the enterprise fund, and that the fees that you charge to counties to do the audits is to keep the enterprise fund going. So I'm just curious, are you then trying to get the money for the additional staff retention out of the general fund? And are we defeating the purpose of having the enterprise fund then? Can you kind of talk to me about that a little bit?
Madam Chair, so the audit practice division is an enterprise fund within our office. We have four or five other divisions. We have a legal / special investigations division, we have a pension division, we have a government information division, which are all paid for using general fund direct appropriation. So the staff retention calculation is based on just those positions that are paid from the general fund.
Okay, and it wouldn't include anybody in the enterprise fund category?
Madam Chair, no, it would not include any of those individuals.
Okay, all right. Members, any other questions at all? Representative Kahn.
This brought up a new question. Did we ever think, maybe to Mark and Helen, did we ever think of making contributions from the pension funds to pay for the cost of pension fund auditing?
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, Ms. Roberts and I aren't remembering offhand. We'll have to look it up. There is, and Mr. Lindemann may remember this, at some point there was a subtraction from local government aid to pay for part of the auditor's government information function.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Lindemann.
Our pension division does two functions. They do compliance reviews, and they do investment analysis reviews. The portion of the division that is attributed to compliance reviews is reported to the Department of Revenue and is reduced from the pension aid that is distributed to fire reliefs.
Okay. All right. And is it just fire relief that you're reviewing, or are you doing more than that?
At one point, it also included police reliefs, but I don't think there are any police reliefs anymore. So,
well, Representative Kahn, follow up.
Part of the issue is one of the investment policies of these various ones, and what are the number of separate fire reliefs things? But we've given them. At one point, I tried to make them all invest through the State Board of Investment, and got totally trashed trying to do that. At another point,
County, come on.
What? Another point, we then took over making it, setting up a kind of separate organized fire relief investment fund, and made it voluntary for ones to join in, and they joined in it. Unfortunately, the year I was really going to go after them, because a lot of them were handling their investments by putting it in cash funds in local banks, was the year the stock market kind of went belly up, so they all look like investment geniuses for for doing that. But again, it's something to, you know, it's something. Just the voluntary approach has gotten more and more, you know, more and more people investing in it. But it is, I mean, this is to stupidly manage investment funds is really a you know, the serious problem for local units of government that we could rectify by making it less voluntary.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess what I would, after having Mr. Shepard go through and rewrite that archaic piece that we of the bill that we just looked at, I would just recommend that sometime in the future that the state auditor look at the rest of those auditing sections of statute and bring those into modern day language and instead of the archaic language they are, so they've got a better, clearer understanding of actually what they mean. Because after I think the struggles that we went through, I think that would be a good thing to go through, and I think that should be on your list of things to do when you take that back and take a look at those sections of statute and bring them up to today.
Members, any other questions? Okay. Mr. Lindemann, we gave you a list. Unfortunately, we tend to do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So we look forward to your responses. And members, with that, we are adjourned.